This is side one of tape three. Continue. You were talking about Silver Springs.
So, in other words, Silver Springs was losing its real traction because of the rot of the dam. And so I prepared letters to the editor and that sort of thing, and I'd already written to the Silver Springs management to get them back of it. And I mentioned it to Margie Carr, and she got upset and said, "Don't write that. If you do that," what I wanted to do was get a fish pass around. It's only about 12 feet high, and it'd be no problem of running a very gradual ditch around it full of aquatic plants and fix a pass and get all those migratory fish back.
Right.
And she says, "Don't you dare do that here. Then there'll be an excuse for them not putting it back." And I shouldn't have listened to her, but I did. And so that's 10 years ago, and here we are, they still don't have a fish pass or got it back. And I think I should go ahead and write it. But that's an example of that's the kind of environmentalism, activism that I think is wrong. Mm-hmm. I think you ought to have all the facts out there and consider them all, and then we can put them in some kind of relative order using the emergy method.
Yes.
But you can see that we get, some of the activists don't like us because of that.
Right.
And they don't like us when we point out that maybe you do need exotics. When you have excess nutrients, you need your exotics there to get rid of them and you know, things like that.
Let's go back to the point about the students. You mentioned the environmental agencies, both at the state level and the federal level, being filled with perhaps too many conservation-minded people.
Let's follow up on that point. When you paraphrase me, again, then I back up a little. I'm for conservation-minded. What do you mean by conservation? See,
right.
And as you know, it has a bunch of meanings.
I want to talk about who peoples those agencies, and then.
Well, I'm in no position to. I don't know who all they are, all are, but I know that. Let's let it go at that. I don't know. I shouldn't try to say who's in these agencies now because I don't know, right?
Right. Well,
I can tell you when their policies are wrong. Like in the aquatic plant management and their unwillingness to do emergy evaluation for mitigation and so on.
Yes, but at the same time, at least in Florida, it seems that many of your students have gone on into important positions in the state government and local governments and water management districts.
But they have to compromise.
I see.
And they make, they push, they end up with some kind of a blend. It's interesting. People like Robert Christensen, who's with the North, the St. John's Water Management, Connie Bursock, who's with DEP, and I guess there's 100 of them out there that have come out of our programs in the last 30 years. So.
Do any of those students, do you end up talking to those students later about...
Sometimes, once in a while.
About those compromises?
But I've dropped the ball too many times. I'll get an email or something, I'll put it aside because it needs a nice answer.
Yes.
And then next thing you know, I've let too much time go by. And, that's one of my regrets. And so we didn't reinforce them enough, maybe. If we're talking regrets, another is that the Center for Wetlands has done so many important things for the state and so on, and it needs a big permanent endowment. And I should have gone out after it. We were fighting the battle of energy and the tax we were under for that instead of perhaps. But the problem was the Center for Wetlands was set up as under four colleges with a board and so on, and the regents. But then engineering was just one of them, and IFAS is another, and planning and architecture is another, and arts and science. And when I was on sabbaticals, we had directors from those different units. So it was a... we should have had it part of the Florida's, in recent years, is push for private money, right? Large sums. But by that time, Lombardi had taken the cross-campus centers and split them up and essentially turned us back to engineering. I decided not to fight that. That was against the region's rules. and engineering were happy to have it, and but it was not one of the priorities.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wouldn't put it in the priority for the money seeking.
Right.
So, and if they wouldn't put it in, who? The main administration. So each college had priorities other than wetlands, and so no money was requested, no large money.
Mm-hmm.
So multi-million dollar grants would have been possible, and I probably, if I'd have gone around the state, done that, I could have, in spite of that, I think
mm-hmm.
we could have raised that, raised an endowment. But that's
mm-hmm.
still yet to be done, and I think Florida's the other state that has huge wetlands and has had centers and endowments is Louisiana, and we ought to do at least
yes.
as well as Louisiana.
Yes. So I suppose in the engineering college, when you have computer and aerospace and other industries contributing huge amounts of research grant funding, it must be hard to compete for attention against those departments.
Yes, so the wetlands has got good money, good support, you
mm-hmm.
know, from Florida Phosphate
mm-hmm.
and from
mm-hmm.
National Science and all mm-hmm. kind of places. It
uh-huh.
It's operated between half million and a million most of the time that it's been in existence. But the current administration, the technology, particularly in
yes.
the technology explosive that we've had, information technology
yes.
over the last 10 years, to them, this didn't look like technology
yes.
to them, and they were happy to have it, but they weren't
right.
weren't going to push it, and so we even had trouble hanging on to the, and we lost the staff when I retired. We lost a staff member
mm-hmm.
because they didn't realize they were doing it, but and Ronnie Best left, and we ended up with one less staff member. That's so it cut back at a time when what's needed is. We now have the means and methods for proper use of wetlands and how to
mm-hmm.
evaluate them and where to place them and how to
right.
deal with them as nutrients. We really understand it. Most of the kinds of wetlands have been thoroughly studied, and so, but then that's the problem. The environment still remains just below the surface in public affairs in Florida.
Yeah, I guess particularly with the technology explosion that's
right.
going on, and
that's
how
right.
yeah.
But that's why coming back to a lower energy world is
right.
going to be
right.
People got the idea that technology was energy free, and of course, I think that crisis in Florida straightened them out on that. The more solar, the more high tech you have, the more energy it takes.
Right.
The servers just to operate the internet are taxing
yes.
taxing the resources and. Jersey and things like that.
Right.
Progress, technology, information is energy driven, and
yes.
so is the economy. And so the minute your energy tightens up, then your economy tightens up, and the information growth stops. And then when it gets even tighter, you have to cut back. And
right.
doesn't mean you stop all progress, but you cut progress back to probably its tenth as fast. And that's what's coming. That's what we need to get task forces to do. And political suicide, probably for anybody other than a well-established politician to come out and say it. We say that we are going to have to cut back. That means
mm-hmm.
we're going to have less people. And of course, the people have to do with religious reproduction and
mm-hmm.
so on. Scream bloody murder
mm-hmm.
on that. It says
mm-hmm.
you can't cut. Bible says we must make people, and the reality says you've got to cut back people. And how
right.
are you going to do it? And if you don't, you're going to get epidemic disease and the crash, and the economy that does cut backs takes over economically and so on. All of that reverses. Many things reverse, and it's in our culture. It's in, worse than that, it's in the Constitution. The Constitution was written for an expanding,
yes.
Invasive culture moving into a new continent. And it,
mm-hmm.
And it's going to have constitutional amendments and so on. But,
mm-hmm.
And even the very fundamentals of private property is in Western water law and things like that, which are designed to accelerate growth, have to change.
Right.
So, anyway.
Let me throw out just a couple more big picture issues,
okay.
Florida issues, the destruction of citrus trees and pine trees to stop epidemics like citrus cancer,
yeah.
a canker, and the right. pine beetle.
Nature maintains diversity by letting, not having too many of any one thing.
Right.
In other words, the tropical rainforest that we studied so long as examples, and here's 100 green trees there, but each one's chemically different.
Mm-hmm.
And for an insect to eat it, it has to have the enzymes different. So if it eats that one, it hasn't got any energy left to eat another one. And the next tree like it is over yonder somewhere. It can't get there without a bird eating it. And so,
right.
The birds are set up to deal with more kinds. So their mechanisms, diversity is the way you prevent epidemics. On the other hand, some pulsing is appropriate. Okay, so that's two principles there. Now, when we do agriculture, intensive agriculture or intensive forestry, we build monocultures, and that's only possible because we set up some way to defeat the consumers, the insects and microbes that would normally just run rampant through it. So we have the pesticides on the one hand, or we have more sophisticated ones where we try to have insects, control insects and other things like that. But so the question is, if we have a stable landscape that has some pulsings and some growth and some diversity, and so we're getting growth, we're getting the waters managed, it's pleasant, diverse environment for people, particularly in an urban society, it fits. And somebody sets up a monoculture over here, and all of a sudden it's having trouble, pine beetles or something, or citrus diseases, fruit flies or something. Do they have the right to go and destroy the landscape and its nice balance just to favor their enterprise? All right, again, whenever you have an alternative, you do an energy evaluation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it may be that when you had... maybe if you had a landscape with nothing but those trees and nobody living there, and you add up the energy of that, it would come out favorably. On the other hand, in modern Florida, with its high diversity of most people doing something else besides raising monocultures, that doesn't add up to good energy. So,
but agriculture is still the number two top industry in the state.
Yeah, well, that's been the justification, but there are other ways to do it too.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to have monoculture. You can have four species instead of one.
Has anyone done an MRG analysis that looked at the citrus canker epidemic?
I don't think so. We should do it.
Yeah,
all these things could be done and take long.
Yeah.
Be right back.
Okay, sure.
Somebody else's. Maybe it's not, has no justification. Because trees like the loblolly's here, we had one get full of something and die about 20 years ago and fell over, so what? And presumed decomposed and had woodpeckers in it for a while first. The diversity, of course, we've maximized diversity here. We've tried to accelerate it. Probably protects it, and probably protects it from, even if it gets beetles, from harming somebody else. Well, of course, I'm happy to do whatever the regulations are. It's not that important in one tree, but the big mistake is planting monoculture, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Putting all elms along the roads in New England was a big mistake.
Yes.
You just set up the problem.
Right.
So don't do that.
Right.
There's maintain diversity, and maintain the diversity within a plot, and also maintain the diversity of plots. I mean, they tried to do Miracle Rice, you know, and my first energy evaluation was 1966, and I was in North Carolina, and they invited me to go to Washington as part of the President's Science Advisory Council, which was taking up the question of agriculture, and we brought our evaluations, and boy, the agriculturalists landed on me like crazy in the subcommittee, and they voted 20-1 to not to include my section, which had calculations of what was wrong with their miracle rice thing. And,
right.
But the larger committee says, well, those guys are biased and narrow, and so the larger committee put mine in. So our first publication on average evaluation in agriculture, which shook everybody's heads up, 1966, is, you know, it's in a publication of from the White House.
Could you follow up on that idea a little bit? If we shouldn't have monoculture in Florida, who should do it? Are you, you know?
Well, I think you, the latest problem is monoculture within the same species.
Mm-hmm.
And molecular biology produces something, the next thing you know, Monsanto or somebody is,
right,
has got all the corn in America,
right,
one gene, and that means it's set up for one disease to take it all out. And you talk,
right,
about famine, you're going to have it.
Right.
I mean, that's the worst possible thing to do. And what I'm talking about is not related to some other worries, like, well, if it's toxic to insects, how toxic,
yes,
is it to your new child? And,
yes.
I used to, yes, study embryology, you know, at Woods Hole, and we used to add little tiny bits of chemicals to Arbacia eggs and watch the normal growth go twisted and,
wow,
and produce abnormalities and,
right,
you know, things like lithium and,
mm-hmm,
and so on. But so this business of messing around with the chemistry of food is awfully dangerous. But,
yes,
but the monoculture thing is really, really, really hazardous. And the people doing it, you see, molecular biologists have less and less knowledge of systems or complexities,
right,
or the next larger scale,
right,
or of even of economics, and they're dedicated and they push for this and it sounds great to themselves and so on. And
yes,
it's the public has a feeling that something might not be right, but it may be worse than they realize. So,
how about the frenzy over mosquito-borne diseases?
Well, when we set up our big project, Rockefeller one, we brought in a virologist, Flora May Wellings, and she came in with a chip on her shoulder and was going to prove that our stuff was dangerous and hazardous.
Mm-hmm.
And anyhow, we set up Sentinel chickens all around, and
mm-hmm,
and we took drillings, you know, of the virus in the waters and then down underneath after it's percolated down through the peat. See, these wetlands act as a very slow filter and recharge the waters, and they also flow laterally and so on. She hunted and hunted and hunted and finally found one virus underneath after all her measurements. And she says, well, even if there's only one virus, if it had been St. Louis, I would have tried to shut you down. And of course, St. Louis is the one that is the encephalitis that has had epidemic-like properties. And it's transmitted by mosquitoes, not natural mosquitoes, but the exotic mosquitoes that come about when you have pots. Is, you know, what killed the Panama Canal was not the natural mosquitoes, it was the African Aedes aegypti, which had been brought over and grown in pots.
Uh-huh.
And that's what was killing them. So, and so that brings me around to the point that if you rush in and spray, and they're doing it right now,
right,
you knock out the natural flora and fauna, I mean the natural insect fauna, and the
mm-hmm,
checks and balances within the hundreds of insect species that
mm-hmm,
eat each other and so on, you're going to end up with the mosquito problem, worse, of a few species which are capable of creating an epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is absolutely wrong, this knee-jerk action. The public doesn't understand it. And,
right.
But anyway, in the case of in our studies, I had Sentinel chickens out in this yard. I wanted to see how they were here.
Uh-huh.
And there weren't any here, and they were in our wetlands. And
huh,
so they were in the mosquito. Now I'm talking about I'm talking about Eastern equine encephalitis.
Uh-huh.
It turned up in the chickens that were in our wetlands.
Mm.
And so we quit having students stay out there. And then, fortunately, Bitton, a professor in our department, came into the department, and he did viral studies and showed the nonsense that Flora May was trying to make big fuss out of nothing. But he set up columns and
mm-hmm,
percolation showed that how long the virus lasts before they're denatured or eaten by something.
Mm-hmm.
And, so anyway, that our solution, that it was okay to put treated sewage waste waters in wetlands,
mm-hmm,
had worked out. But early on, somebody in that region says, just wait, I'm going to sue that guy to take everything, you know. So it, you have to do something different. You have to be a little tough.
Yes.
And grit your teeth. And that trailer park, lots of little things happened. You know, somebody was doing dark room. So they were turning silver loose in there.
Oh, wetland,
and it sucked it up just fine.
Really?
And later on, we got Grant and set up strips in the swamps and let the water percolate through with heavy metals. And they didn't even get 30 feet or they were gone. I mean, it was the most. And we then set up a project with Poland.
Mm-hmm.
And they had they had wetlands over there that had received mining waste for 400 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's been one of the things. Well, wetland will catch them for a while, but then it'll turn them loose. Well,
right.
They were doing just fine after 400 years. So anyhow, that was one of our books, and this is a 10-year project. And it's full of energy evaluations as well.
This is heavy metals in the environment,
yeah,
using wetlands for their removal.
Yeah, now that's that's the real title we started out with. But it wasn't even that. It was it had a technical name. But you know how publishers are. They change your titles. The author doesn't allow them to keep the titles. And we were so anxious to get it published, we agreed to it. But anyway, it made it look like it was my research. It wasn't. It was all our research. I was head of it. But this was a group of people. People like Joe Delfino and so on.
What about what about the mercury showing up in all the fish and panthers in the Everglades?
Well, of course, my colleague has been in on that one, Delfino, and you know, it's a mixture of a couple of things. One is that incinerators turn the stuff loose and it spreads over and rains down, and then another was that, of course, peat grabs it, but then if you start to oxidize the peat, you're turning it loose.
Mm-hmm.
So when you drain the Everglades, it oxidizes. So there's some
right.
kind of combination of this was increasing it.
Right.
But of course, you have top of the food chain, even the sea, you say swordfish, you're going to have some mercury.
Yes. I was going to turn to some sort of big picture Florida questions.
Uh-huh.
What do you think is the worst environmental mistake we've made as a state? That's a hard one.
Of course, when you say environment, I don't separate out the
right.
environment from the economy.
Right.
I put them two together. And,
right.
And it's the same one made in the civilization, and that is allowing automobile horsepower.
Yes.
It's part of our freedom, allowing individuals to apply power to things that don't feed back. So that's
yes.
that's running the cars, and that's putting in throughways instead of asking what's the most economical transportation, and making it so that people are not, that they have to organize around their towns.
Right.
But in a free society with expanding energy, maximum power is to give each individual free time. I mean, having an individual car gives you probably save a couple of hours a day, and your time is high energy. And but again, that's going to change, and so it's drastically. And those of us who lived through the energy crisis that started in '73 and went on to 1980, created that huge inflation, and we're about to do it again, and there's no institutional memory anywhere except in people like senior people in universities, and the government people are all gone, and they don't have a clue of all the things that were discovered and worked out, what we call net energy valuations. They're going to have to. You've got to turn to the previous knowledge or else repeat it. And so I'd say that the governors of Florida have all been developers by and large in maximizing population growth. is certainly a mistake. That is, you have to maximize empower. That is, you have to maximize your total use of energy, and but maximizing the population is when you're going to have to cut back. Mm-hmm. Is very short-sighted, and a whole bunch of things connected to the energy problem, allowing air conditioning to displace windows.
Yes.
What
are some of those lessons from the 1970s and policies that are no longer being followed?
Well, and it didn't get far then.
Mm-hmm.
For example, agriculturalists would like to think that they can substitute corn for fuel,
mm-hmm.
by making ethanol. And
mm-hmm.
ethanol is useful in cars, can be used, and even as a supplement is all right. And we made evaluations, and this time there were five other different groups, and they used somewhat comparable methods, but they all showed that by the time you have taken the corn and converted it into alcohol,
mm-hmm.
and so on, you don't have any net energy appreciably. And the only people that thought they did had left out the energy in the services. In other words, they say, well, human service isn't much energy, we'll leave it out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, what goes into the raising and paying and supporting of all those people is huge.
Yes.
And so we include it and they don't. So, for example, and this was only, 5-10 years ago, they had another effort to sell ethanol, and they
mm-hmm.
had one of the congressmen and the IFAS people were there, and somebody invited me, and so we went up to High Springs or somewhere, and we had this nice, the news people were all there, and we all made our little speeches, and you know, and then here come how they were going to new industry for Florida, and we're going to do agriculture and ethanol, and
mm-hmm.
And of course I get up and point out that there isn't any net gain, and that you're not going to stimulate, and that fossil fuels gives you around 6 more than you pay for, whereas this stuff gives you about 1.1 more than you pay for. So
mm-hmm.
it's never going to compete. It's not a good benefit, and therefore it will not be economically competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they were embarrassed, and then. The new company they just formed, and it went bankrupt about 3 months later.
Oh my.
I mean, but we've had this running war with people who want to do things that aren't good,
mm-hmm.
that aren't net benefits,
mm-hmm.
Because they're not quantitative, and they think, so.
Yes, that reminds me to maybe go back to fossil fuel, to petroleum for a moment. We were talking about the Eastern Gulf of Mexico earlier, and you were saying that there wasn't as much petroleum there as there is in the Western Gulf.
I said this line somewhere,
right,
where the sediments from the rivers are,
right.
You'll find it.
Right. But what I wanted to ask you, should we be drilling around at the Apalachicola embayment, where we know there is a lot of natural gas? You
All
know,
right.
is it appropriate
All right.
public policy
okay.
for Florida to just go ahead and let them drill that?
All right. Okay. All these energy evaluations have to be done at several scales.
Mm-hmm.
And you could say, you could look at the scale with the guy who's going to do it and whether
mm-hmm.
it's a net benefit to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can look at Florida. And then you can look at the country. And for Florida, and public opinion senses this,
mm-hmm.
the energy involved in that amount of fuel relative to other things going on that would be hurt by it
mm-hmm.
could be evaluated, and I expect they would come out to be, in other words, you start to get oil spills all up and down Cedar Keys and
mm-hmm.
so on, you're going to lose a lot of money and thus energy that
yes.
comes in. So you probably wouldn't have a hard time disproving that. On the other hand, energy will out, as we sometimes say, and our attitude is a country like the U.S. that's trying to have world influence and is in position to do good things worldwide,
mm-hmm.
and is expected to, and it's our public policy to,
mm-hmm.
it better save something for emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So that applies to Alaska and to places like this. And
mm-hmm.
if you could if you do the exploration and not develop it. And that's a hard thing to do because
Once they find it, they want it.
Well, not only that, but the money is they can't have to operate with capitalistic methods. On the other hand, government could authorize the exploration but not the development of it. So
that's an interesting idea.
Yeah. And there will come a time when the US is maybe least able among leading nations. So we're not as close to the Near East, and we might be in serious trouble for lack of reservoirs. And of course, we've several times tried to store reservoirs. We even pumped some underground for a while, and then they first time the price rises, they go and pump it out again. The Teapot Dome scandal was another example of the reserve that was saved for emergency, and they went ahead and used it.
Right.
So it's, again, it's pretty hard not to use available energy. So.
Right. What do you think Florida has gotten right in terms of environmental policy?
Well, I think it's way ahead of the rest of the country in getting its people concerned with big lobbies and just water management districts. Having them is an example, and many kinds of organizations and a lot of laws, I think. Some people come to Florida and say we're leading in environment, but which is pretty bad.
Do you think our efforts to have growth management laws have meant very much?
Well, you know, those have been on and off, and it was great while they lasted, and Errol Starnes was in. It was, and that's when we got the money to do all these South Florida studies and brought out these facts, and then you have this reactionary business coming back, and you get people that believe that it's a little like an analogy to the ecosystem. They want to go back to the successional state when it's dog eat dog competition, and the government has minor influence. Whereas late in development, you have the opposite. Well, the minute things start to level off, then people say, oh my goodness, growth has stopped, let's go back to being more independent and let's get rid of government. Well, actually, it's just the opposite. You need your government even more.
Right.
You need your regulations even more, because that's when you have to make things efficient and not be going around destroying one thing to fit another.
Who are the Floridians you believe have been particularly good stewards on behalf of the environment?
Well, of course, ASCII was pretty good. In recent years, Graham's done some.
Right?
Even if he did belittle us at this growth conference, because I wanted to talk about long range.
So you wanted to talk about what, putting up a barricade at the Florida state line?
No. I never advocated. It's a maximum power principle. You have to let the system go. I was trying to get a task force to look at the time when everybody would be forced.
Right.
The tourists would be going home, and there'll be all the second homes would be put up for sale, and nobody can afford air conditioning, and electric power is so expensive that it'll be used for choice purposes and for information, retirees won't be able to sell money up north, sell homes and come down. You won't have any retirees hardly, and you'll that'll take care of some of your population problem, and your tourists will be less, and certainly they won't spend so much money. I mean, we know how that works, because we have, every time there's a small turn down, we observe it.
Right.
And so when you have a major turn down, states like Oregon have got some hydropower, and they struggle to try to keep some salmon, and I went out and did a study on that last summer, by the way, but we evaluated salmon. But Florida is in for, we don't want it to crash, and it doesn't have to, and why can't we get a task force going? And part of the problem is when the universities, there's so much pressure for the young faculty to go out and get grants, that they have to go with the industry and places to get money that is not related to the long-range future. Industry doesn't look a way ahead, nor does government. So the only people that can do it are the universities, and we're paid to do it, and that's what we ought to be doing. And got to stop this pressure from the deans and the chairman. You need to tell a young faculty member that not to have a grant for 3 years until you get some new ideas going or something. You know, we it's a terrible pressure. Universities are not doing their job, long-range job.
Let's talk more about your long-range fears about what could happen here.
You call it fears, and I talk about it the prosperous way down. Not
yes.
A fear. It's
right.
The fear is that people won't recognize it in time to bring to bear the public opinion on their leaders to do sensible things. That's the fear. And that's what we're in the business of trying to shake people up. So, and the more we shake them up, the more we think they're nuts.
What do you mean by a prosperous way down? This is the title of your recent book.
Yeah, there's lots and lots of policies in there which would allow the total economy to come down, that is the energy consumption and the total buying power to come down at the same rate that you get your population down, so that the real wealth per person stays the same. That means your standard of living stays the same.
Right.
That means you can hang on to your medical care and you can prevent epidemics and all the things that can cause you to crash. You have to do away with unearned income, for example. Americans have suddenly, just in the last 10 years, I think, gotten into the idea that unearned income is okay. Unearned income is interest that you get for doing nothing.
Right.
And lots of people have been using that a long time, but the idea that that's a God-given right was involved in the last election. You know, the idea of taking your Social Security and getting more money out of it, which is only works during growth. So, the consequences of no growth. I remember how it was, and you know, we had a period of depression, which is when I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
There was a period here, and a lot of things change, and borrowing is regarded as evil or dangerous, and only for certain things, and you learn to adapt to what is and enjoy small scale things and so on. You know, the culture changes, and you don't expect our current generation of, say, maybe your generation and younger, they've got the wrong idea about things, and they need to get straight about how the normal pattern is. You build up and then you pulse consumption, and our society is built up, and this is the pulse of information society. This used up, then this has to come down. And so then you build up some more and do it go again. But the pulse is based on fossil fuel is much higher and stronger than later pulses will be for a while, because we'll have to go back to doing our rhythms based on the fisheries, forests, and agriculture.
So. What do you think the time frame is?
Well, there's a set of new books out by the resource geologists, not from government, and they have it. They're discussing it all the time on this thing. I, of course, put a lot of this in. They wanted a chapter on the state of things, so I went and pulled up a bunch of factual stuff. But their idea, we were lucky to get the book published at all with this title. I mean, lots of publishers turned it down. And so they're hiding our diagrams, and that really, you know, these were beautiful diagrams, and I guess they're trying to make it readable by hiding them. And I don't know whether that's true of verbal people, but this is 2009, is about the timing.
The peak is 2009.
Yeah, but see, the short-range things pulses all kind of things.
Yes.
That have to do with OPEC and whether mm-hmm. there's any local wars and mm-hmm. and other factors, so that you can't just extrapolate from, because it's oscillating. But
mm-hmm.
So in other words, the present economy slowed down. People mm-hmm. think that that's just an economic oscillation, and
right.
they just don't get it that the economy depends on the real wealth being used, and if the price of fuels goes up, that means that less fuel is going into the economy than before, and therefore growth cuts back, and therefore the economy cuts back. I mean, you just can't get that straight,
mm-hmm.
that the economy is based on real wealth, and that real wealth is this fuel. So, but we try to put that into the elementary courses, and mm-hmm. our way of doing it really doesn't work, because mm-hmm. We do it with these little systems diagrams, and
right,
and this
right.
does it. But is this being adopted? No.
Right.
It's used a lot around here, but people turn off with the networks.
Right.
And I'm not sure you can explain it without them
mm-hmm.
adequately.
Mm-hmm.
At least not until they get a shock.
Mm-hmm.
And will take time to do it. So mm-hmm. that's where we are.
Mm-hmm. So what would you propose that a task force could do? And would this be a Florida task force?
Well, I think we need it at each scale. You uh-huh. need a government, or each division of the government needs to have some small amount,
mm-hmm.
just a couple percent of their budget going into planning for a lower energy future.
Right.
And make it clear, we're not advocating it, we're not proposing it, we're not putting up a wall against tourists. We're
right.
saying you're going to be forced
right.
to do less. What is it that we're going to do that it will retain our quality of life and
mm-hmm.
and progress and standard of living and health,
mm-hmm.
and what will wreck us? And of course, you, just as it's already pointed out, just cutting the horsepower of American cars back to where it was 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
More like Europe, would take care of all our energy needs for some time anyway, but eventually that has to come down more.
But unfortunately, people wouldn't get elected on that platform, would they?
Not until the public sees it.
Right.
And then they'll all jump
right.
on the bandwagon and say, well, I told you this years ago, and all that.
Right, right.
So, and you're surely in history, this phenomenon of the pulsing must be obvious to you as a historian. And,
yes.
And this business of building up a crescendo of stored
yes.
attitude
mm-hmm.
followed by
absolutely.
A reaction. That's certainly there.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are the appropriate periods of that?
Right.
And then that the most common way to put them all on the same basis is this energy, that is energy of one kind.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can straighten out understanding history also. And of course, that's so far from, let's see, one of your popular historians who was on this committee.
Which committee?
Bob Worth's Civil War Committee.
Oh.
Dissertation. But and even that reprint I gave you, we had a historian on there, and at the end he put in a minority report saying this isn't going to be very important.
Really?
And, he said he enjoyed the exercise. But the historians want to believe that people can make a difference. Well,
mm-hmm.
they can,
mm-hmm.
But they don't think there are any common principles beyond that. Is that right? That is, they'll recognize constraints of energy or water resources. But
I think that's really changing.
Is it?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, the history discipline seems to have started to embrace more of maybe an ecological viewpoint starting in the 1960s, kind of when the other parts of the country are becoming more aware of systems and the environment. So it does seem to be changing. Mm-hmm. But I think you said earlier you had more optimism for the environmental future than for the human future. I know I'm not paraphrasing you exactly.
Yeah, sure.
Right,
I don't think we have enough fuel mm-hmm. to burn ourselves off the planet.
Right.
We're going to run out short of that.
Uh-huh.
And it's happening now.
Uh-huh.
Is that optimistic?
Well, I was interested. I was interested in finding out before I met you. I was curious whether you were an optimist or a pessimist, and it seems that you're an optimist.
You bet.
For the environment, but perhaps a pessimist.
No.
From
the life, and that's what. And,
yes.
And Betty's tried to help make my tried to help make the latter chapters where we talk about what it means for individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Try to make that a little more vivid than I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that life is much better on a smaller scale.
Right.
And, you know, it's bicycles and friends and neighbors and
right.
And not such a frantic time of it, and more care, more of a village taking care of the children. And,
mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. fewer children have to be, but you take
right.
care of them better.
Right. I can see that.
No, there's no... The assumption that coming down is pessimistic is in our culture.
Right.
And that's the first thing I have to say.
Yes.
Have to hit. That's what the title. Coming down is prosperous
right.
if you do it right.
Right. It seems like it would be difficult to be optimistic when you have seen some of the environmental destruction that you've seen. You know, whether it be here in Florida or in the Amazon rainforest, you've seen some of the worst of the worst. So.
Yes.
You were just saying, but you've seen how nature fights back, so to speak, how it recovers.
Also, I think society adapts. I mean, the self-organization, which is, will do it beautifully. And
mm-hmm.
The problem is, if you look at history, there are some societies that come down crashing, right? You've got
mm-hmm.
some examples. But we look at, and I'll ask you to find me some cultures where they came down gradually, more prosperously, so we say.
Mm-hmm.
But in ecosystems, they do it every year. That is, I just was in Alaska, you know, growth everywhere. And then some of them go and hibernate, and they put some in the seeds, and some migrate, and so you turn it down and then turn it up again. And,
mm-hmm.
and it's the whole rhythm is prosperous. And
mm-hmm.
so the reason we're in the problem is that we haven't been through this particular exceptionally high peak, and
mm-hmm.
so we have
mm-hmm.
We don't have any precedent or any cultural memory much. We have the Roman times coming
right.
down, but people
right.
think of that in terms of failures, a million theories, of course, whether
right.
whether it's lead in their blood or barbarians or the torn these the brilliance of organization spreading to other cultures so that they no longer had a monopoly. And I don't know what your favorite combination is, but I think it's just that that it is inherent that
mm-hmm.
you have to have some pulse go up.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you can have Christmas trees. You have this one grows a while, this
mm-hmm.
one grows a while, and this one grows a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so our theories of even of the universe. Instead of one big bang, we see the universe
mm-hmm.
as a bunch of pulses,
mm-hmm.
and that
mm-hmm.
gives you a much longer. But it gives you a steady state,
mm-hmm.
and still have your pulsing.
When you look around today at some trends such as urban infill and this proclaimed desire to return to the old types of walkable city,
yeah.
Do you see that as a positive, as a good sign, a potential solution, or do you think that's just another way of developing Florida in a new way?
Well, as you know, there's a struggle between the infillers and others, and I may write a letter to the editor on that if I get them to publish one of our spatial diagrams.
Mm-hmm.
the natural hierarchy of energy is the key thing, and it's in my book that we're trying to get published now. It's Environment, Power, Society Revised, except this time it's called Environment, Power, Society, and the Hierarchy of Energy.
Uh-huh.
And that hierarchy has is this thing that we just talked about, different scales in energy. It's the pulsing that occurs at each scale. The bigger the scale, the bigger the pulses. And there's also the spatial organization. And we believe it looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
The little centers to bigger centers, bigger centers to even bigger centers, and so on like that. Now, that's the correct development that maximizes. And you can see that individuals are relative to here, and mm-hmm. then for some functions they go all the way to the center, and for other functions they don't.
Mm-hmm.
But if you fill that in solid, you knock out the basic system, so that solid infill isn't right. On the other hand, having centers that are organized with a certain density in relation to other centers and connected up appropriately with converging pathways, roads and bikeways. So there's an appropriate pattern in between, and what we have in the public argument is whether or not when this type of thing starts to develop due to developers going out and not mm-hmm. doing any better, just plopping down developments. But and sometimes they may get closer to the correct one than the idea of a solid bands building up. So anyway. So I think there are principles here to explain the right development, and that we'll end up with the right development eventually, but you may mm-hmm. make some mistakes along the way.
Mm-hmm.
That's what humans do, as you know. They either do it right to start with, or they do it wrong and have to correct it.
Right. Well, how about, is it Eugene, Oregon, that has a very dense urban center and has created a boundary around, so there isn't any development in the rural outside.
Our spatial work has been done in collaboration with Shirley Wang at Taipei in Taiwan. He's mm-hmm. been spent 2 years here, and we've been out there a lot. And,
mm-hmm.
and they have an agricultural band. They mm-hmm. kept it's a little like the London Green Belt.
Uh-huh.
Except theirs was a practical one. They wanted to hang on to their agriculture in case they had to support themselves in their fight against China. It such things as that warp it a little bit, but
mm-hmm.
on the other hand, his patterns for Taipei still involve this hierarchical development.
Mm-hmm.
There's a planner named Doxiotis. You run into him,
mm-mm.
and he shows the idea that the pathways of humans, that people have different radiuses of,
uh-huh.
And that those that are part of the big functions that have to do with the whole area, they mm-hmm. have centers here, and then they have large circular patterns, their pathways of influence, mm-hmm. and whereas here, people out here have a smaller pathway, and that all of that's part of this hierarchy. This is certain much of these that goes with a lesser number of those.
Are you saying that neither the urban density nor the suburban sprawl are maybe the appropriate
That's
patterns.
Right.
It's something in between.
There's one in between that fits the natural hierarchy, and that we know what those ratios are, because it's the amount of energy at one level to make the next, and,
mm-hmm.
and it has a spatial pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, it's again, that people have to follow principles is foreign to everybody's thinking. They say,
yes.
Well, we can pick what we like.
Right. Right. I wanted to ask you about your personal level of energy or energy, because you've been so prolific in publishing papers and books, and you're I think you had 90 masters and doctoral dissertations and more than 85 grants, and I just wanted to ask you where your personal...
Maybe I took too many, because some of those we finished up in the reports and should have carried it further into, should have taken out the time to go influence the public with it, or in some cases get them into journals, which we didn't
mm-hmm.
finish doing, and that's what I'm now doing. This is the last,
mm-hmm.
since 96 I got sick, and so I'm trying now to concentrate on that, and we've gotten 5 books out this last 2 years. I mean, excludes this one. So
where does all this personal energy you have come from?
Well, of course, my brother says that we're driven,
mm-hmm.
whatever that means.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, my fundamental ethic is that people should make a contribution, and that they're probably in a better position to decide that than anybody else. So that's a form of democracy, right?
Right.
But that you should, that your priority should be to make some contribution to everybody, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, except kids who their contribution is to learn. Mm-hmm. After that, they find something they can do that mm-hmm. they feel is contributing. And of course, after we stumble on some of these fundamental principles,
mm-hmm.
and after we locked horns with everybody over energetics, and it's been like a war of sense to try to get these things proven, because and demonstrated, and we know that people aren't going to switch from just that, but that it'll all be there when the switch as the switching is forced on people. So,
mm-hmm.
so to realize that you have the key to understanding the earth and the universe as well, is, and that it's a more general way of looking at it than any mm-hmm. of the other theories for explaining things. And so, why wouldn't you do the best you could to get it out?
It must be nice to feel you have the key to the universe.
People call that arrogance. And once they hear that, they don't read anymore. And so we have people like my wife who go through and make sure the arrogance doesn't show.
So that's one of her values in your collaboration.
Well, it's not arrogance. It's humility, too.
Uh-huh.
But if you've got, let's see, if you've got 1,500 people who believe one way, and
mm-hmm.
then you've got to be a little bit strong to keep
yes.
pushing, right?
Yes.
For example, this energy theories of value were pushed back in the 40s when energy was invented in the 40s, and three different people were assigned, to Helmholtz and Mayer, and one was a biologist and so on. And that energy concept, they invented it, I don't know whether they discovered it. And since then, they've been trying to get an energy theory of value, and there's one book that reviews all that and shows how many times it was offered and how many times the people were scrounged and jumped back.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is they were adding energies of different kinds. And so once we got the principle right, which is this hierarchy thing,
mm-hmm.
then we realize that all of their efforts now work out. And so that's why it's a breakthrough, but it's not the kind of that people are ready to recognize, because it's a paradigm switch, and paradigm switches aren't going to happen until
mm-hmm.
Since it's a paradigm switch in the entire world and the entire viewpoint of everything, it's not going to switch until mm-hmm. everybody in the entire world gets up to that point where
mm-hmm.
my God, we got to cut back, and energy determines our
right.
life after all, you know.
Yes.
And then of course they'll say, well, we know it all the time.
One thing that I think I'm still not clear on is the human management of systems. It's hard for me to grasp whether we should be doing this management, or whether we're just part of this larger system. You know what I mean? I didn't
yeah,
ask that question
yeah.
right. But
no, the Earth is used to do the best it could with inherited
mm-hmm. right.
And genetic evolution was slow, and there were pulses and things, but all of a sudden they worked in about getting humans with this special property of being able to process information better
yes.
as not only individually but as a group
yes.
that together. Then all of a sudden the Earth had an entirely new breakthrough, and of course
right.
that one of the great speculation is that where else in the universe is that? And it's very high transformity, to use our word, energy per unit.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, even when we're doing trial and error, we're doing it better than if you had genetic organisms trialing and error and taking million years to stumble into the right one,
mm-hmm.
and we trial and error and stumble into it in 10 years. I mean, that's fantastic progress, right?
But we're not doing better if we're destroying ecosystems like the Everglades and unable to fix them.
Well, we're fixing them finally. We just had to, they had to get worse before they get better, right? Mm-hmm. And they're following the things that we reason. So the final point to your question is that we're beginning to understand enough to where we can make the humans can do management according to what is logical sometimes, rather than letting a trial and error tell us what works. But we're not quite there, and the public doesn't even believe it's possible that some things are logical. And so we're emerging. I mean, it's just incredible in my lifetime the global sharing of information has happened. I mean, when I went to weather schools back in the 40s, nobody knew anything about weather at all. And now everybody watches and knows all kind of things from the Weather Channel. I mean, and the money programs have got people off the track. And that was all right for the growth period. But now we need, I don't know whether it be a program or some personable person, Clinton or somebody. and we tried to reach him one time, and Gore too, with tried to hand him a copy of Prosperous Way Down when they came through here, but I don't think it ever got to him. And they probably wouldn't have understood it if he had.
It seems like Gore would have been open-minded to that with his book, Earth in the Balance.
Well, we'll see. I thought we might try again. We bought some copies. We don't have a lot of money, but we can. But how to get this reviewed in a few places so that it comes to the attention of the public decision. Even if it's journalists want to play or have fun with it, if they want to say, you talk about stupid things, look at this book, and then have interview, just anything to get it to the attention of people so that. Because I think it's already in the subconscious of half of our population that that we are coming to some kind of a position. They're trying to say it's sustainable, a level off, but it's not. It's not sustainable.
Right. Just back to human management for one moment.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you how the current focus on cloning and genetic engineering and so forth fits into that. Do you think, it sounds like you do think we've gone too far when it comes to genetic engineering?
I was trying to emphasize maintaining diversity, and of course that's what the human system does, is through its sexual method, it keeps the genes sorted and variable, and the trouble is we've stopped natural selection. And the diseases used to do it. In other words, as soon as your total energy got below a certain level, then some disease would get you. And then we defeated most of them. And, and so now it has to wait till something organic fails, or cancer, which is the immune system fails.
Are you saying immunization stopped natural selection? Or what do you mean by that?
We have, the public health system has stopped the natural selection. So the human populations are, in developed countries particularly, are accumulating all kinds of birth defects more and more because there's no selection against them. Even my own father's family, 6 children, 3 survived. I mean, that was that was in the 20s. And now we don't have that. You raise one kid and expect them to survive, and then if you get a defect, we keep them alive, and so, and the medical ethic can't deal with it, but the energy will, and when the energy levels go down, then everything goes down, your health maintenance has to cut back, and so the challenge is how do we deal with that? Well, our approach in here, for example, is you of course you use universal health care for the minimal things, and then try to use the insurance system for the big things, and that means that you still will probably have, but this big wealth difference is going to disappear because much of our wealth is false wealth, it's its stock markets, that it will deflate when the stock markets come down. In fact, that's the worry, is how do you bring the stock market down gradually?
Right.
They were doing it now. So I don't know if that, does that end?
It does. It does.
Flooding is just a game to mm-hmm. people want to do. That's not anything practical. And, mm-hmm. and the energy involved in all these things is so huge. It's mm-hmm. All that's going to drop out mm-hmm. as soon as the excess money that's in a few hands drops out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how come we're, journalists don't know this, and how come they're spending mm-hmm. their time with those things instead of with what's really important, which is the preparations for adapting us all to the new conditions. I mean, that's where the journalists are just
right.
children. They don't know enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We need to give them 1 year's course in the relationship of the economy and resources.
It would be a good thing to propose to the journalism dean.
Well, I probably may have done that in the past. I don't know.
I wanted to ask you what professional activities you have planned for the future. It sounds like getting your message out is important to you.
Sure, and the I live 1 year at a time. That's uh-huh. probably at my age you have to do that. But the one that the Environment, Power, and Society revision that we mm-hmm. made a 90% complete version of it, John Wiley decided they don't want it, and they shifting to electronic publications and so is Elsevier and I think they're all going to be bankrupt in a few years because the cutting back on energy is going to cut back on that.
And
I don't think people can deal with books on the line, because if you want to look up something, that's fine, but those servers can't keep that short-term memory.
And,
mm-hmm. 10 years from now, what's on a server now is not going to be on there.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be able to. It'll be full of new stuff and stuff that's about half of it or more is needs to be sifted out. So that's, whereas the human body already does that beautifully,
mm-hmm.
short-term memory can do it. And then as we grow up, particularly educated people, and learn to what it is that in the short term they need to save for the long term. And society has to do that now. Right now it's been in a save everything, and
mm-hmm.
Now we
right.
need to do the other, and that's, historians can be of great help
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
if you can get your principles straight.
Right. Do you feel like you got across in this interview the kind of most important ideas or lessons? Is there anything else that we should...
I think so. I'm not sure I did what you wanted, which was to relate to historical events and the environment of Florida.
You know, you did. We went through a lot. We went through a lot of events and issues, and yeah. you really had some interesting things to say about all of them, yeah. and I think it will be useful.
All right. I'll mention a couple more.
Yeah.
President Marston was a good...
Yes.
And... he gave me his Presidential Medal when right. he came out with this book. And then he said, he gave us $5,000 and said, shall I put the money in this cogeneration plan at the university, or shall I put it into academic honors programs?
Oh my, and what did you say?
I said, okay, we'll go study it. And of course, by the time we had finished, we did a full energy evaluation of the university, and that's a good one, and it's referred to in one of his books. But we realized halfway into the study that the university, it's the same thing. You cannot understand one system unless you see its role in the next.
Uh-huh.
And so we had to find out what's the university's role in the state in order to decide whether the honors programs would do more for the energy of the state than the thrifty things of doing a cogeneration.
Yes.
And we didn't get it done in the time, and he was very disappointed with us. We gave him a report, but it didn't answer his question. And of course, then they got more money and they did the cogeneration plan, and I guess they did the honors programs too. But
that's an ironic story. Well, that sounds really interesting, the emergy analysis of the university. What were some of the things? Do you remember some
sure,
of the points that came out?
Sure, and then you can get them. You know, all these things are well summarized with one or two pages in that book. But
environmental accounting.
Yeah,
okay.
It has them all. And,
mm-hmm.
And for example, a good part of the energy of the whole university is brought into the students.
Uh-huh.
Because they have a moderately high level of education before they come in.
Right.
And another, I mean, the utilities and all those things, they're substantial, but they're not the main thing. And then, of course, the output products, there were four, you know, this public entertainment through sports.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's education, of course, and then the research products.
It was public entertainment, education, research, and what was the fourth?
Well, the usual. Of course, the ones that university professors, I mean, presidents usually mm-hmm. push are teaching, research, mm-hmm. And service.
Right.
And they leave out the biggest one, which is leadership, mm-hmm. and long-range leadership.
So you put in public entertainment,
yes,
and long-range leadership.
Yeah, and of uh-huh. course the sports thing needs right. needs to be fixed. But one of the interesting things is libraries.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a book and you know what went into it, let's say you know the energy that went into that person's mm-hmm. training and experience in the 2 years they spent, so you've got a value for it. You got one copy.
Mm-hmm.
Now you make 1,000 copies. Now that's called a split. Now mm-hmm. we have that much energy divided up, and the energy it takes to make a copy is small.
Mm-hmm.
And when you make 1,000 copies and spread them all over the world, now you've got, and if, even if nobody reads it, you've got a shared amount. So the energy of the original is now divided up into those 1,000. But then if they're all lost, and so you only got one copy left, like some book out of the Middle Ages, now it gets back the original energy, plus what went into saving that copy all during that period of time. So, well, that's the same thing works with endangered species.
Hmm.
So the energy that it takes to develop a species from the next nearest neighbor, we can estimate that,
uh-huh.
although the data aren't very good about how long it takes. And then if we evaluated a park recently, and so 30% of one sandpiper's population was there, so 30% of the energy was involved in that. So that went into the energy evaluation of the park. Things like that. Let's see. I'm off subject, but
what do you think your impact has been so far?
Well,
if
I
you
think
could
it's like
assess
Mark said,
that.
Mark said the other day, we probably our biggest impact is sending out some extremely mm-hmm. gifted and well-balanced students to
yes.
do things. And, I mean, even Bob has done a great job in getting everybody stirred up into trying to do ecological economics.
That was Bob who?
Yeah, Bob Costanza.
Oh, yes.
Referring to
yes.
Even though he's tried to maintain more input from money interests by
mm-hmm.
using their methods now.
Right.
Although he has used the other methods in the past, but he poses the word energy because it's so attractive and it's spreading so much that I guess he regards it as competitive.
Mm.
Let's see if there's anything else. Well, what did you expect to find over here today? I mean, what?
You know, you answered every one of my questions, even the ones I didn't ask. You ended up answering them before I asked them.
Okay.
So I think it went very well.
Okay.
If you have sort of one enduring message, you may have already said it, you may have already imparted it, but is there like, you know, sort of one message to leave me with?
Do our part of the self-organizational process in fitting humanity and the earth,
mm-hmm.
Which includes the preservation of the most essential information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Well, I don't know whether I ought to have you take out those personal comments about my brother or not.
Well,